Welcome back to the Financial Beast Podcast. This, of course, is where we show practice owners how to harness the power of their practice, build personal wealth, and go out at the top of their game. I'm your host, your BFFF, your best financial friend forever, Eric Miller. And we got a topic today that I'll be honest with you, I was super nervous when I first started talking with these guys, because you can, they're about a foot smarter than I am when it comes to this arena of technology and integrating technology going forward into the medical world, but it's going to be needed. And I know that as things progress, we're just going to have to learn how to move faster and use some of this advanced technology that's out there. If we want to survive, if you want your practice to survive, if you want to be more profitable, if you want to have more money, we're just going to have to learn these things. And even old dinosaurs like me are going to have to understand this. So I'm really, really glad to have both these guys on. They're from a company called Athelis, and they are a medical tech company. And I have Daniel Stewart and Greg Martinez on the show, and they're going to talk all things advanced information, AI, and more than that. So welcome, guys, to the show. I'm really glad to have you here. And we got introduced through one of my advisors who had come across you. But if one of you guys wants to take a quick stab at exactly what Athelis does, and then we can kind of get into the questions of why this is such a needed area for practice owners if they want to succeed going forward.
Yeah, so I would love to take a shot at that. So just to give you a little bit more background, who I am, Greg and I are both actual physical therapists. So we're based in Utah. We worked at two different companies, but we both worked in an outpatient ortho setting for a couple of groups out here. And as we got into kind of the weeds of what the space feels like, what the profession is doing and the trends in the profession, I think as many people feel the same way as us, you know, there's a lot of issues with insurance companies. And, you know, when was the last time we actually received an increase in reimbursement rate? You know, and with all of...
We're still waiting. It's only been 25 years, right?
Exactly. And you know, overhead costs are going up as time goes on. And so what Greg and I do is we came over outside of a full-time practice to work for this company called Athelis. And what Athelis is trying to do is trying to use some advanced technologies, whether it be through AI, similar to like a ChatGPT, and also some advanced algorithms in order to help practices increase what they're making when it comes to what they're collecting per visit, but then also reducing overhead costs and billing costs on the back end. So we have a number of different technologies for every aspect of RCM, especially and including documentation that has been helping many clinics across the country. So.
Okay. That's good. Greg, you want to add anything to that or?
No, I think he hit it pretty hard on the head there. I think it's just, I mean, my personal experience is I got burned out, right? The only way to make more money for me was to see more patients. More patients meant less personal interaction and contact, more documentation. And that wasn't why I wanted to be a physical therapist, right? So I wanted to do something different that found a way to help the profession as a whole increase the margin that Daniel explained. Right?
Yeah.
Lower reimbursement, higher cost, thinner margins. How do we actually create greater margins through technology? And I think that's probably the most simple way to put what we're trying to do.
So where do you start with people? So like, you know, because, you know, owners are out there and most of them are just trying to like market and get patients in the door. And, you know, they, you know, I know they have, you know, certain systems that they've used. Like where do you start with them to try to explain how this is going to work and how it's not going to overwhelm their lives by making a change to the way they're doing things right now. Where do you start with that?
Yeah. So a lot of times where we start is when we get introduced to a group is we look at their current systems, right? Mm-hmm. I think the way that the medical space, especially the insurance market right now is set up is that insurances are trying to make as many systems manual for each of these clinics as possible, which when they're making it manual, right, that takes a lot of bandwidth from their front desk staff. It takes a lot of bandwidth from their billing staff, from their providers. And so when we really sit down with groups, we take a look at like, hey, okay, how are you doing verification of benefits, authorizations, eligibility? How are you guys documenting? Are you guys using scribes? Are you are your providers feeling burnt out? Are you trying to push a certain number of patients on them a day, and there's pushback because, you know, they spend most of their time documenting? And then the back end are, you know, how are you guys sending out your bills? Are they electronic yet, right? Are you guys sending them through text messages and emails? Are you still doing paper? Stuff like that. And then based on their responses and their pain points, like I said before, we have various technologies to help speed and automate those processes. And that's really where, you know, there might be a little bit of time commitment on the front end, but the amount of bandwidth that they're going to save once they implement some of these automations is going to give them more time to focus on either marketing or like Greg said, it'll give them more time to focus on the real reason why they went to school, right? To treat patients. And so that's really what we offer.
And do you see that you generally reflected, like when someone like really implements the technology that you have, is it usually the average reimbursement rate? Is that what you see go up for them mostly in as far as a product of what you guys do?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty simple way to state it. But the question always becomes is the how, right? Like, do you make more per claim submitted? Yes. How do we do that? And really, it's about a clean funnel is the way I like to explain it, is if we're clean on the front end, then all the steps through the middle and the back end of the process are also cleaner, right? And so using systems, processes, again, incorporating AI into early steps and making sure our most important metric that we always measure for every practice is first time pass rate, right?
How so good? Because I'm not really sure what that is. So
yeah. So let me break it down. So basically a first time pass rate, the definition for, I will say our definition internally at Athelis is a little bit different than technically the billing world. So the billing world generally says, hey, if we submit a claim and the first time we submit it, it gets past that clearinghouse and gets just to the payer in some way, great. You know, it's successful. It's passed as a first submission, right? For us, it's not just does it get past the clearinghouse to the payer, but we say, did the payer respond with some form of payment, right? Okay. And that's the real overall measurement for us is, if we're using automation and technology to create really clean systems for your revenue cycle, then it should reflect when we submit a claim the first time, how often are we actually getting you paid? Because then you're not putting time and bandwidth into rejection or denial management, right? You're not working old, you know, AR, aging AR. You actually can just really focus on clean claims out the door the first time. And so I think that's the easiest way to explain it, but we can get into the nuts and bolts of how we get the funnel clean. But regardless of what you're trying to build, if you don't get clean claims out the first time, your system's not as efficient as it should be.
Yeah. And is that a real, I mean, that's probably a real reason why a lot of physical, and it's not just physical therapists too, I guess it's any kind of medical company that submits reimbursements or gets reimbursed by insurance companies that you guys would deal with, correct? Okay.
Absolutely.
But that is, I would say, a big challenge with most physical therapists, isn't it? Is getting rejections on their reimbursements and then having to go back and try to reclaim that money. And I know it jams up their lines quite a bit, you know, because you just delivered a service you didn't get paid for.
Exactly, Eric. And one of the interesting topics and kind of hot topics in the industry right now is that there are payers that are starting to use AI or algorithms in order to deny claims, right? So recently there was an article that put out about Cigna, right? So Cigna has started to use an algorithm in order to deny claims. And one of the interesting things about that is, you know, most of us and most of the providers, when we think about an insurance denying a claim, based on medical necessity, medical necessity, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we're thinking that they have an actual doctor or a human going through and looking at the note and saying, oh no, this isn't medically necessary, right? Whereas now that they've started to use these type of technologies, they're only spending on average 1.2 seconds per claim before they deny it. Right. Wow. And so last year, the article said that last year, over 300,000 claims were denied in 2 months using an algorithm. Do you want to guess how many of those 300,000 claims were ever reworked by the individual clinic's billing teams?
I do want to know how many.
Less than 5%.
Oh, my God.
Right? So really? my question to sites is, you know, why would an insurance company want to do this? Right. And I think it's obvious, right? If they can put more of a burden, a manual, time-consuming burden on each of our clinics, right? The chances of them being able to actually rework it and resubmit it and actually get paid for it go down. And now we have Cigna making, you know what, $77 billion a year. I think UHC is at $20 billion a year. And they know that if they can make it difficult on every site across the country, that it adds up over time. And it just turns into profit for them. And so, you know, I to kind of loop back to what you were originally saying is that a lot of providers, you know, a lot of their back end processes get jammed up because these insurance companies are kicking back denials and rejections. And a lot of that is now being done by AI. And so how do we use this technology as providers to increase our margins for our businesses?
So then I'm going to take it that the technology that you guys have would highly increase the probability that does not happen then, right? It just provides a cleaner record so that it would minimize the probability that claim would get denied. Is that essentially correct? What you guys would do?
A piece of that is something that we use called a rules engine. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the cool part about our setup is talk about automation. So we have a patient that shows up to the clinic, right? Insurance is verified. They check in, they come back, they have their treatment there. The provider completes the note, their documentation, they assign the CPT codes and ICD-10s. Once they lock or sign that encounter, a process begins on our end automatically. And again, no one touches this. There's no human involved in the loop. But there's a certain number of fields from that note that are extracted automatically. A 1500 form is auto-filled for a claim. And then that claim is put through something called a rules engine on our end. A really, really robust rules engine that says, hey, make sure these requirements are met before we submit this claim because we want it to be clean the first time.
Right.
Right. And then it's automatically sent out to that clearinghouse. And no one on our team has done any manual labor or touch or work on that claim whatsoever. Okay. And then our team, now we oversee it, right? Someone oversees thousands of claims that go out every single day, right? But no one touches it. And then if we do get some rejections or denials, sure, we have teams on that. So we have people, and again, our people are mainly engineers, world-class engineers and ops people, not lifelong billers that are then addressing rejections and denials to create systems to prevent the same trends from happening in the future, right? And I think that's the moral of the story for me is, I always said this to my patients as a provider, right? Are we really treating the root cause, or is my treatment just addressing your symptoms? And putting Band-Aids on things by just repeating the same tasks manually over and over and over again as you pay people an hourly rate is a Band-Aid approach. If you're paying data scientists, right, to rebuild systems and processes to make sure those same mistakes on claims don't repeat themselves, you're then addressing the root cause, is the way I'd look at it.
So I got two questions. I'm going to go back to the 300,000 one that you had mentioned. So that was one insurance company, right, that denied 300,000 claims, basically?
In 2 months,
utilizing their AI system. Correct. Yeah. That's essentially what that was. God, that's crazy. And then I forgot my follow-up question to that. it'll circle back to me. But I know what I want to ask you. As far as like, give me like your stats when you guys work with somebody. Like, okay, so let's say I got I have 7 PTs on staff. Right. Maybe I do $1.5 million a year in revenue, $2 million in revenue a year. Where would you guys see what can someone, I know you can't guarantee anything, and I'm sure there's things that, you know, obviously the person has to implement it, but where would they see the success, in doing that? I mean, are you, you're essentially replacing doing in-house billing themselves, correct? So you're outsourcing the billing at that point.
Yeah. So it largely depends on each and every company's setup, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that we currently run is when I going back to the beginning and how we call ourselves a tech partner, and instead of a biller, right? And, right. And the reason for that is because when we approach clinics, we want to mold our technology to the way that they want to operate. And some companies just don't want to fully outsource at all because they feel like they lose the oversight and the visibility into their billing. And so one of the things that we have is we have a very robust dashboard, right? And our dashboard has all of their clinics' numbers in it, and it updates in real time so that they can see where they're at. They can see every single claim that's being worked. And in those cases, we're often able to kind of have some of their team do things in-house while we do some of the more monotonous tasks to offload their team. So a lot of times we'll have teams that are just overwhelmed, right? Their billing team is overwhelmed or understaffed. And so we're able to help them scale by offering some technologies in order to improve their efficiency and allow them to see more visits and handle more of a workload with less people. Now, a lot of our clients do have us fully outsource their offering, their billing. Mm-hmm. And so we have some clinics, where they only have one person that interacts with our person. Other than that, we handle all of the eligibility, we handle all of the back end stuff, the patient payments, stuff like that for them, so that they can just focus on everyday clinic care. So
if you guys look 10 years into the future, I mean, are these big insurance companies all going to adopt that same methodology that Sigma did and do the same thing?
Interestingly enough, there was a site here locally that when we were in the discussions on it, whether or not we wanted to partner together, I shared that article had just came out. And the owner of the clinic said that he spent all night deep diving into Cigna and this company that they hired. And it turns out that almost every one of these other companies are implementing some kind of algorithm of their own. And so I would expect in the next 5 to 10 years, and Greg can jump in if he agrees, is that almost every company is going to be using this. And in order to maintain profitability of a company, of a private independent practice, like, we're going to have to start using this technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just say, I would agree. And I think the interesting part in the big picture of that is, remember, the companies that are implementing this AI and technology, the payers, right? Mm-hmm. They're the ones making billions and billions of dollars a year. And then you have the practice that you just referenced, right? The 5 to 7 provider practice doing 1 to 2 million a year.
Right.
And again, their margins are razor thin, and they're supposed to compete against this behemoth and think that it's a fair fight. Right. And that's where Daniel and I get so passionate about what we're trying to do and solve is, let's give these practices the tools they need to fight fire with fire, because there's no way they're going to be able to do it on their own when these groups are making as much as they are. They control the rules. They make the rules of the broken system of billing. And they're by far the most profitable members in this, you know, medical model we currently have to work under.
Yeah. One thing I've learned, money loves speed. And speed is comparable to service in some cases. I'm sure you guys have been to restaurants where You know what? The food wasn't that great, but it came really, really fast. So that makes it okay, right? Yeah. So, you know, I think when you start looking at how are you going to increase revenue and production and profitability, you have to have speed. And, you know, I'm not a PT. Never been in a PT. Well, I've been in many physical therapy offices, but I don't know exactly the difficulty in the record keeping and keeping notes. You know, we have to do that in our business just because there's oversight in doing that. But you have to be able to like increase the speed in which you do things. And, you know, what would you say to people that have like a fundamental disagreement with AI? You know, they're just like, this is going to... I'm sure you guys have had this conversation with some people. Matter of fact, I was going to ask you, what is the rebuttal that you get mostly when you start talking about what you guys do in this technology?
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there are certainly aspects of AI that, may scare some people, right? I think that it's a unknown that of what its future capabilities are. However, I think with most of our sites, if we look at what billing and working with insurance companies really is it's mostly just data, mm-hmm. right? And so when you think about the role of an average biller or a manually based biller doing all of everything manually, a lot of their knowledge in how to bill insurances is all kept in their heads, right? It's all kept in their brains. Or the joke we always do with every clinic is we take a look at their computer and it's covered with post-it notes, right? Or Excel spreadsheets, right? And it's impossible for a human themselves to manually remember every single billing rule, all the combinations, all the changes that are coming with insurance companies at all times. And so when you think about that data model and all of these companies across the country investing in a human trying to remember those things, that is a very, very easy basic purpose of an AI or an algorithm, right? Okay. Is basically we download everything that is in all the rules that billers hold in their minds or on their computers into what I like to usually call like an intellectual property for each practice. That changes and grows over time, that never leaves. Like, let's say a company had a biller leave. All of that money that they've invested in that biller over the years in terms of salary and how to properly build for that practice has now left, mm-hmm. right? If we have a way to download that into an AI or an algorithm, right, that doesn't leave and it stays with the company, gets better over time, and your business is better protected from things like turnover, accidents happening, COVID, stuff like that.
Okay.
And so that's, I guess, long story short is the actual concept of billing with AI, I think is a very, very easy thing to comprehend. It's kind of like back in the day when there was a job and a very basic job of like a phone operator, right? Just patching people through, right? And there was an automation that automated that. I think that's what we're going to see over the next few years.
I mean, this sounds almost like a no-brainer then. So why do people say no?
That's a good question. I think honestly, if you ask me from the provider side and mindset, right?
Yeah.
Is we're comfortable with what we know.
Right.
Right. And change, it's more safe and comfortable to them, even though it may not be perfect, to stick with something that's familiar than to potentially go through the risk of something that could be better, but they don't know that and go through the pain of changing. Right.
Yeah.
And so the most alignment that we get with sites when we bring up what we do, cause I agree. I mean, we're biased, but we agree. There's a lot of value here, but it has to align with what's most important to that practice at that time. Right. And where they are at with pain. If there's not urgency and like I'm trying to create some type of improvement in my practice for these reasons, then sometimes it's not a good fit, even though the numbers say so. And that's okay. We're okay with that, right? We're not there to convince people. Hence, we're providers. We're not like hardcore salesmen. We just want people to be aligned to make the most informed and objective decision for their practice at that time possible. And if it's not the right time, we'll loop wrap around it, you know, at a later date. But I think mainly that for me is the main reason people don't start with us.
So would you say it really isn't the size of the practice that where you guys fit best in, it's the mentality of where the owner wants to go with the business then that would make this a better fit? I mean, I'm sure you would prefer the bigger, the better, right? But is there, like, what is that? I know we talked about like your avatar for like, where do you guys see the best fit at?
Yeah. So, to answer your question, for our avatar, it usually is dependent on like Greg said, like where the owner's heads are at. Right. So one of the beautiful things about AI and not having to pay a human to do a lot of tasks is oftentimes it's more efficient, but for us, because we're not having to hire out thousands of employees to do things like manually call payers or check portals or other things, is we can obviously offer rates that are usually either very competitive or even lower than what current practices are paying. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, for example, our practice actually uses Econologix here. I won't name drop them because I'm not sure if that's allowed, but that's how we have originally got introduced is we have experience with Econologix, and wanting to create a more profitable practice involved us not only increasing what we were making per visit, but also decreasing our billing costs. And so not only now are we making close to $8 or $9 per visit more, but a lot of my front desk staff has been offloaded some of the responsibilities to an automation. And then we also dropped 1 or 2% in what we were paying our biller at the time. And so all of those added up to, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings in just this year. And so as we look to do those for other clinics, you know, we do have, you know, we would prefer like a certain dollar amount, but at the end of the day, we're into just having conversations, right? And and Greg and I are always available for anybody at any size to have a conversation with, to see if there's some of these technologies that work for them in their practice.
How did you guys get so fascinated with AI? I'm curious. Is there a personal story on it, or is it just like, this is what you, I mean, I know you're both physical therapists, so.
I'm a nerd, Eric.
Yeah. Just tell me why. I mean, cause I mean, your life is like touching people, you know, and fixing people and getting them out of pain. And, was there a point, I mean, do you guys still treat it all?
I do. I have a little clinic in my basement, treatment table,
there you go.
My liability insurance, cash only, but yeah, I mean, I'm never going to lose my license. I'm actually at a local physical therapy conference for my state. I'm on the board right now. I always want to be involved in my profession and help out, but yeah, just not on as regular of a basis is normal. So
that makes sense.
And I think for me, you know, and you'll hear this story from people across the country is just the requirements that insurances are starting to have on PTs. Are making burnout very, very, a very real problem in our profession.
Yeah.
The number of patients we see, the documentation. And one of the things that Greg, funny story, Greg was actually my final CI before I graduated PT school.
What's a CI?
A clinical instructor.
Okay.
So in PT school, that last year you do clinical rotations where you go on site and you learn from a PT. And so Greg was my final one before I graduated, and thank goodness he let me pass, because I don't know what I would have done with myself. But over the course of those 3 months I was with him, we always talked about how could we really make a change in the profession? Mm-hmm. Like how do we actually improve lives for therapists? And how are we going to be able to do that if we're just nose to the grindstone every day seeing 15, 20, 25 patients in a clinic? And so when he came with me, he actually went to Athelis first, came with me and said, hey, this is what we're doing in the space. This is what we're trying to change. That's what led me to join them. And now the benefit for me is really seeing the change and growth in our profession, on the clinical side, on the business provider side.
Do you guys remember when you wanted to become physical therapists?
Yeah.
Oof. I'm trying to remember. Mine was, I wish it was a better story.
The reason I asked that is because like, it's very interesting to me in dealing with like all different types of healthcare owners. Like if you ask a veterinarian, they knew they were going to be a veterinarian at like 6 years old, right? Like 5 or 6 years old. Okay. And it's funny with physical therapists, I tend to find that the reason they got into enjoying physical therapy was that maybe they had like an injury or they experienced an injury when they were, you know, young and they had physical therapy and it kind of changed their lives. So I'm always fascinated to hear like what got you guys into the physical therapy space in the first place.
Yeah, mine's not, I mean, I wish it was more exciting. I did have an injury, a classic story, right? I shattered my shoulder snowboarding, had to pin it back together, had unfortunately actually a negative experience with physical therapy and vowed that it was not what I wanted to do whatsoever.
Wow.
And then going into college, definitely wanted to do something medical, loved sports, was doing more athletic training, kind of, exploring different majors. But I think what really drew me back into the field was one of my athletic training professors at BYU recommended me to go see another therapist. I didn't want to go. I thought it was a waste of time, but just did it a completely different way, right? Personal, one-on-one, hands-on, involved, taught, explained. It was really meaningful, impactful to me. And so I said, I want to figure out more about this. I actually started working for him as an aide. And then it was kind of game over. And I think big picture why I love PT and not straight, I almost went to medical school instead, is I want to be a part of the patient journey, right? I don't want to see them for 5 minutes, make a really rapid diagnosis, give them a prescription and send them out the door and hopefully they get better.
Yeah.
Right. I want to be in the trenches with them in their hardest moments, day to day, listening and coaching them through hard things together. And seeing them come in one way and leave a different way is very fulfilling, right? In medicine. And I'm not having to go through the risk of just, again, the band-aid approach of prescribing all day without knowing if I'm making an impact.
Yes, I see that. We delved into the pain medicine doctors for a bit. And that was a tough group, you know, because I don't know that they realized if they were actually making any difference at all. You know, because all they were doing was just mostly just prescribing something for someone. And that was it. That was a tough group to work with. Daniel, what about you? What got you into PT?
I have an interesting story. So when I was 16, my parents sent me on a humanitarian aid trip to Urubamba, Peru. And there we built dormitories for an orphanage there. And one of the chaperones, a close friend of mine now, in fact, might even be one the same guy that Greg's talking about. But, one of my chaperones there came and he's a PT that practices here in Salt Lake. And there was one of the orphans there was, had a diagnosis of cerebral palsy. And so we were there for about a month or a couple weeks to a month. And I just watched, his name is Steve. Treat this young child with cerebral palsy over the course of that period of time. And I just kind of fell in love with how he treated, fell in love with the reaction the parents gave because, you know, there the actual access to care like that is very limited. And just felt like it was something I wanted to do. And I actually got really close to Steve. I lived in California at the time and he lived here. And so when we got back and I graduated high school, he asked me to come work for him. And so I moved and got my degree in Utah, worked for him for a few years. And that's what eventually got me into PT.
Nice. So there's what, 300,000 or more physical therapists in the country? Is that pretty close number?
Yeah, a little bit more than that.
Yeah. And there's what, 16 or 17,000 private practices or is it right around there?
I don't know the number on that one.
Yeah. I think that's, you guys have AI. I'm sure you guys could find out really quick.
We found out pretty quick.
I got you putting that in right now. What do you guys think is the, I don't know, 5 years from now, tell me what you think the state of the industry looks like. I know.
It's a big one. It's a big question. Honestly, I think there's some shifts going on. Unfortunately, a lot of private practices are being bought up right now.
Yeah.
By bigger systems, by private equity. and that personal touch of private practice is so essential for quality care and maintaining balance in medicine. So I think that's one concerning trend, big picture. But I also think that combining the changes in technology, AI, right, these progressions here, I think what can happen is we maintain the quality of patient care, but we automate the portions that are important, but create less direct face-to-face interaction with humans.
Right.
Right? It's ironic that I want to use AI to make things faster, right, and shorten my time with each, you know, patient case, right? But it's just so I can be more present with people during that visit. What I would love to see and what we're pushing towards, you know, big picture as a company is you walk into a room, you don't have to have the computer in front of you taking notes, looking up and down, being distracted, right? Not being present. Basically, you have the interaction with the patient being recorded the entire time. Mm-hmm. And then when you walk out of that room, the note is completed, it's automated, it has compliance, it has coding, everything's done. You can take one quick peek at it, check a box, and it's already submitted out to that clearinghouse and ready to go, and you're on to the next patient. And so you're focusing 100% on being present with people and humans, while the worst part of the entire game of being in medicine is being done automatically.
Yes.
But you're also being paid fairly for giving quality care and putting people before, again, business or dollars, and you're influenced by humans and not by, you know, dollars. I'm not saying I have to follow rules that a giant company made up for me to make money. I'm doing what I think is best for this patient, and the technology is going to take care of those rules for me so that, you know, patient care always comes first.
It is ironic that that could be the one thing that saves the industry is that technology, because you're right, you can't replace physical therapy with AI. It's just, it's not going to happen at all. So it's kind of a fascinating to look at that. What else, about AI could I ask that, you guys think would be valuable for like, I'm just thinking like, from a practice, well, number one, you guys deal with all kinds of different healthcare, industries, right? So it's not just physical therapy. So it would just be, do you guys just focus on the physical therapy kind of branch, or do you go to any kind of healthcare provider that deals with insurance reimbursements?
Yeah. So to give you a little bit more information on our company and its trajectory, right, is we're backed by a lot of major players in the space. So like General Catalyst, Sequoia, there's another one called Y Combinator. And so we are growing at an exponential rate. In fact, I think we've seen close to 170 to 200 sign in the last 14 months. Right. Jeez. And so what we're trying to do is cause a disruption in the space, right? We're excited to grow. Anybody that wants to meet, we're willing to meet and make it work so that we're, you know, so that going forward, there's a good partnership that's being held. And that is across all specialties, right? PT, OT, speech, surgical centers, mental health facilities, or providers, pretty much anyone who bills medical insurance, we will work with.
Chiropractic as well. Chiropractic and integrate functional medicine people as well. So okay, that's cool.
Yeah,
I love that. Why do you think so many PTs struggle on the business side?
It's a good question. I don't. Again, I'm personal bias here, I will admit, but I don't think many people go into PT to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think this is the profession to choose. Like, I want to be rich. Let's do PT school, right? Especially with how much it costs now and the debt they have to get into. I think that their hearts are in the right place of like, I want to make a difference one-on-one with patients and see them become a better version of themselves. And so they're so dialed in on that focus that the business side is like, man, if I have to, I will. But what I want to do is be present with patients, which I think is noble,
right?
But the irony is if you leave out the business side, you eventually won't have a business to be able to keep the doors open to treat your patients.
Hey, facts right there, man. That is for sure. I think that's the one thing that they never taught. And, you know, I tend to find some practitioners actually feel bad when they start making money, which I was fascinated with when I would start seeing them. Like, what? Feel bad about it? Well, you know, I mean, here I am, you know, making this money and I don't know if I deserve it or not. I'm like, where does this come from? Like, is this something that's like taught in school? Your parents couldn't have taught that to you, you know? Right. Like, where does that come from? This idea that money, having money isn't virtuous and righteous and divine, you know? I guess, you know, I got you guys here. I want to know, like, what do your friends say? I mean, do you have friends that are PTs as well? And I know most of them didn't get into it for the money, but if you're gonna, I mean, it's gonna be something about the money that you like. Tell me why. What am I missing? Is it just the patient care thing that you wanted to focus on?
I think in our profession, right, is there's a lot of, you know, we want to be, you know, very moral, right? It's very like when you're treating a patient, you don't want to come off as someone that's like, oh, I'm in this treating patients for money, right? So like in schools, yeah, they don't teach any business really. There's maybe like one class that teaches you anything about what it takes to start a clinic. And mm-hmm. usually what I got from that class was it's too expensive to start a clinic. Right.
Yeah.
So like, it wasn't like, yeah, let's go start our own business. Let's go create stuff and build. It was, this is the research on how to get people better. It's bad to want to, you know, make your employees treat enough patients a day that it actually makes it profitable for the owner. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of owners have to, you know, if we can reduce workloads for their staff, they're going to feel more comfortable because not only will their staff be happier and be more willing to see more patients, and that will equate to more revenue for the practice owner.
Yeah. And yet the ultimate immorality is performing a service and not getting compensated for that. Right? Well, I can't be wrong about that. That is the ultimate in immorality. So here you have this group of moral people that want to do goodwill, and you have, and I don't want to paint all insurance reimbursements as immoral, but man, they have a system that really is immoral.
Yep.
Because you have, and I forgot who, somebody had said it at one point in time, but they just said that, you know, PTs just eat, you know what, more than any other practitioner, you know, they just sit there and take it, you know, and don't fight back like they should. And I don't know if that's a group thing that needs to change. If there's, you know, I don't know. I don't know what that is, but man, that to me is the ultimate in immorality, is to produce something and not getting exchanged for that.
Yeah.
And coming from a guy that, you know, is in the finance business, you know, I understand that. Like, you can't provide a product and not get proper exchange for it and expect to be solvent, expect to have money, expect to be able to pay your taxes or have reserves, or let alone put money away for retirement or anything else that you'd want to do if you're not getting properly compensated for that. So that's where I always get fascinated in this and how this industry works. It's just so crazy. You know, and I never really knew about this whole reimbursement medical thing until we started getting into it. And I'm like, they did what? You know, like I never understood it, but yeah. It makes sense now.
It's interesting. Like, what other business model out there where you go to school, you have to get trained, you have to get licensed and take boards, specialty certifications, you open your doors, you know, have the cost of starting a business, you render care. And then you aren't even guaranteed to be paid for it, like you said. And then on top of it, the worst part is you have to then pay staff to actually go fight to get the money that you already billed for.
Yes.
Right. It's just so broken. So same, it's like, can we make a bigger impact, right? We care about our field, our profession, especially the people we treat.
Yeah.
And being in the clinic one-on-one with patients is fulfilling, but can we go from one-to-one to one-to-many? Because any practice that we help, then those individual providers can help all those patients, right? And we can make a larger scale impact as a whole.
Agreed. And I think it would also help the relationship between the providers and the owners as well, because I know that there is a disconnect sometimes between, and you know, because providers, you know, they come out of school, I expect I'm going to get paid this much, or I want to get paid this much. And, you know, there's always this fight between ownership, like owners don't, you know, there's an economic reality for me to pay you this much, right? And they need a certain level of production. And, you know, and it would all work out if you got paid what you got paid for, what you've treated for, but that's not the case that happens. So it, like, you see the problems that it causes, you know, it can cause that, you know, that rift between, you know, providers and owners. And I don't like to see that at all. What would you guys tell new PTs coming out of school? Like, how to enter, like, any advice for them, like wanting to get into the industry? Any interact?
Right. Be careful. So again, I'll just say, like, I love PT. I got to clarify that before I answer that question. Like, I think the profession as a whole, 100% bought in, love it, love the people that are in it, the things that we do. I will say that I feel like there's some problems with the ratio of the time and money you invest to get into the profession and what you make coming out.
Yeah,
and that's
no doubt
concerning to me, right? So I'd say, before even saying when you come out, here's some advice, I'd say before you consider doing it, know what you're getting into. I think more people need to talk about that.
Yeah, I agree, because it's not like you guys are coming out and able to make like $250,000 a year, and yet your student loans are $250,000 or if not more. I'm not really sure what the average is right now, but it's a big amount.
It's about 150 on average, I think. And yes, and the pay is below 100.
Yeah. So that model sucks. So I would say that I'm trying to think of a simple way to look at it though, but I would not have student loans any more than what 1 year's pay would be. Right.
Thank you.
So you shouldn't have student loans any more than what an average salary would be coming out. Now, you may not be able to pay it off right away, but I think that would be the math.
If
you were going to do that, but yet you come out with like $250,000, that's like, it's not even a starter home anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's crazy. It's like a noose around your neck. I agree with that 100%, but what can they do to control the cost of PT school? I don't know.
Yeah. You know? I was just going to say, I don't know there's an answer to the cost. That's again, I'll get a little excited about that if I go too far down that path. But I think it's like we all take the same boards, right? Like rarely is a patient going to say, where did you go to PT school? Oh, wait, I don't want to be seen by you, right? It's the same boards, primarily the same requirements to be admitted and to go through the program. Like, go to the most economical choice possible, because you have to know the numbers when you get out. And I think kids get this mindset in school, unfortunately, of this is a really secure professional. I'll always have a job, which is true, right? PT is not going away.
Right.
But having a job isn't good enough right now, especially with the economy. You have to be able to support yourself, potentially a family. And if you don't know how much it's going to cost you moving forward in the big picture, or you get in so much debt that you won't even be able to pay towards the principal.
No.
Your dollar amount's going to balloon as you're practicing. And how hopeless is that as a provider after all the time, energy, and effort that you put into getting into the profession? That's frustrating.
Yes.
It's discouraging.
That is discouraging. So I don't know if we fixed that part, but I think you do have to look at, you know, your loan should not exceed what you can make your first year out. If it does, then you better go do something else. That's kind of tragic. Let's leave on a good note. tell me your a great success story you guys had with a client.
Yeah, I mean, I think our own story is one that I usually go to most when I talk to other clinics, right? We were a small clinic here. We have 4 clinics here in Salt Lake and a couple of provider and a handful of providers, and you know, working with Econologix on trying to figure out retirement, not for me, but for the owners. And I was very close to the owners.
Mm-hmm.
And just being worried all the time about, hey, how do we make more money so that we can build a financial future for us and our families and our kids, right? And for me, it was, how do I, you know, help you guys do that? So that means I could get paid a little bit more and face these loans that I have. And so as we dove into some of the stuff, some of the details of what it costs to actually run a business, you know, in with inflation and with raises, like we experienced, I think, a 20 to 22% increase in overhead costs because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't have that increasing revenue coming from insurance companies, in fact, a decreasing reimbursement rate every single year, yeah, right? The only way for a practice to make more money in the eyes of the practice owners is I need to push my young therapist to see as many patients a day, right? And so what are other solutions to that? And Athelis has been a solution for our practice here, because we, like I said, we've seen an $8 increase in our average reimbursement rate, which if you think about how crazy that is, over 20,000 visits last year,
yeah,
that's an extra $160,000 for not having to see more patients.
Yes.
Literally the same amount of work produced that much more money. And then like on top of that, because Athelis uses more technology, they were able to save us a lot on our rates. And so yeah, we saw a decrease in our billing rates, an increase in efficiency, an increase in what we were collecting. And I'm assuming now that the owners are, you know, probably working with Econologix to see what they're going to do with all that extra money they have. So,
well, you know, it's certainly, we'll help them with that for sure. yeah, I mean, that is the game right there, is how can I maximize, you know, the return and not, you know, have to still see more patients or, you know, give up quality of care. And, you know, so that's an amazing stat, $8 improvement on the reimbursement rate. That is amazing. Right. How do people, get a hold of you guys if, they want to connect with you?
Yeah. So there's a few ways. One of the things that I wanted to mention before we end is that, like I said, we're willing to talk to everybody. Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things that we do for each of our clinics is we help them run like an analysis, like a financial health analysis, where we take a look at what they're collecting and what they could be collecting based on their fee schedules to see how efficient their systems are. And we do that for free. Right. And so if somebody wanted to even just look at the financial aspect of their business, we'd be happy to do that. You can reach out to either Greg and I directly. I can give you our emails and you can just mention that mm-hmm. they found us from this podcast. They can also go to our website and request a demo online at athelis.com.
Awesome.
And those, I think, would be the best place to reach us.
Awesome. Well, you guys, I'll give you kudos for really getting in there and helping the industry and doing it in a big way. Because I think you're right. You know, you probably could have stuck to what you were doing and tried to help one patient at a time. But I think this is going to have a much more meaningful impact on the industry. So I'm sure it's going to be hard, but I do wish you guys the best in doing that. So thanks for being on. I really, really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for having us, Eric. Appreciate you.